The Star Wars Report podcast is brought to you by Sphero. These are the droids you're looking for. Control R2-D2, BB-8, and BB-9E with your smart device. Watch the Star Wars films together, explore holographic simulations, and so many more fun times, all available at a brand new lower price at Sphero.com/Star Wars. Get a free force band with any order while supplies last, and be sure to use code StarWarsReport10 for an extra 10% off.
This week's episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the good folks supporting us over on patreon.com/StarWarsReport.
Let's do the show, folks!
Come, come, come!
And who might you be?
It's the Star Wars Report!
Star Wars Report!
Woo! Star Wars Report! The place for Star Wars news, features, interviews, and more.
Then we can do something epic!
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Please delete as appropriate.
The Force. It's calling to you. Just let it in.
Oh my gosh. I don't even know how we're gonna start.
At the beginning.
At the beginning.
You're listening to the Star Wars Report.
You just have to do a news anchor man from the 40s to, you know, channel Riley, and then you'll be able to begin.
Wait.
You betcha.
So we're saying that to do a show like this, you have to channel a 40s news announcer to be like Riley?
That's like his go-to voice. He always does the 40s news announcer.
Oh, yes. Well, can you do a 40s announcer? Like, you know, welcome to the Star Wars Report. This is the news.
This is my voice. This is all I have for you.
And those who are listening, that's Teresa Delgado's voice.
Hi! No, that's not me. Hello.
And there's Mark's voice too. We heard him in the background. Mark Herleman.
That's true. I am here.
The Subway King.
The Subway King. He was telling us earlier about his Subway drive-through and guacamole guns. If you are a patron of the Star Wars Report, you have to listen to Rogue Transmissions and you'll hear all about his sour cream and guacamole guns.
Yes. And if you're a patron again, I'm sorry. I've destroyed your eardrums for a very long time this week.
And we also know how Teresa likes her Subway sandwich.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So if you ever order my sandwich, take a picture, post it on Instagram, hashtag Teresa's Way.
Now, what is Teresa's Way again?
Labor profile.
What's Teresa's Way at Subway?
Yes.
So it doesn't matter what kind of bread, but if you want to be me, it's like Italian herbs and cheese, turkey, salami, spicy mustard, lettuce and pickles, provolone cheese, salt and pepper, oregano, and Subway vinaigrette.
Okay, There you go. I'm going to write that down, and I'm actually going to order that sometime.
You should try it. It's super good.
She's right, because you'll never roam alone with a little provolone.
That's one of the complaints I've had about Subways. They don't always have provolone at some locations, but I'm seeing it more and more now.
We've had Swiss for a short period of time. My favorite phrase, though, is because I'm Swiss. I'm like, I'm Swiss, but you don't want me on your sub. I'll squish it. And they're like, what? I'm like, I'm Swiss, but we don't have Swiss cheese. You don't want me on your sub.
You're supposed to keep customers coming back. That scares them. They don't want to come back.
Hey, I have a question about Subway. Does Subway make subs that are, I hate to use another phrase from another sub place, but like a sub in a tub where you don't have the bread? It's like in a bowl.
Yeah, we have salads. Any of our subs can be turned into a salad. In fact,
you chop up. Yeah.
So yeah, you can get any sub. We have a lot of people actually say that, and then they're like, "Can I get it like in like a container on the side, like a salad bowl?" Like, yeah.
This episode of the Star Wars Report is not brought to you by Subway. So hey, we're recording this on May 11th. So this is the day after the red carpet premiere of Solo. Ooh. Now, Teresa, I'm assuming you did not watch it because you're trying to avoid.
No, I did.
You did. So that was the last thing you're going to watch, right?
Well, I mean, I haven't seen any of the clips that they've been releasing the past several days. Basically, when it went to clips for the premiere, I played Emoji Blitz on my phone. So I was just watching the interviews. And I was also tweeting because I wanted my tweet to show up on the ticker at the bottom. And it did.
Yeah. It did.
And I took a picture of it. And I was like, ah!
I love your fandom. I really do. You make me want a fangirl flail. I love it. I love
it. Yeah. Anybody can fangirl flail. Mm-hmm. Essentially Muppet arms.
I felt silly because I didn't realize that it was the red carpet. I just saw these pictures of the Falcon being built, and I'm like, what is it? What's going on? That's like a full-size Falcon. Was it? And then it's like, red carpet tonight. Oh, really? World premiere already? Oh,
well, okay, so here's the thing about that. Why are we having a world premiere over 15 days early? It's because they're premiering the movie at Cannes on the 15th. So in order for them to do it properly, I think they did it the right way. They did the fan premiere, like with the Rebel Legion and Mando Mercs and 501st and everything like they've been doing. They did that first, and then it will premiere at Cannes. And then all the press screenings are happening between today and like Monday and Tuesday. But they're having to do all this stuff so much earlier because the movie is showing at the Cannes Film Festival. Whereas
but why is it so important for them to show it at Cannes? Why is it?
Well, I think it's because it's the big film festival that's going on right now. This isn't the first Star Wars movie to do that. Episode 2 and Episode 3 were both shown at Cannes, but not for competition. They were just screened there for the very first time. So this is the first Star Wars movie in the new movies since Disney bought Lucasfilm to be shown at Cannes. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah,
that's why everything is being done so much earlier than it has for any other film.
I just don't know why like a big tentpole movie needs to be at Cannes.
I think it's because, well, I mean, so Star Wars is a tentpole movie, but it's also, Star Wars is always artistic. You know, like the Marvel movies are huge, big tentpole movies, but I wouldn't say that they're overly artistic, whereas a lot of the Star Wars movies are. And I mean, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen Solo, but with what I've seen so far, just in the trailers, it definitely looks like it's going to be more of a stylized, very like, I don't know, some sort of film that would fit there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I just,
it
you know,
both Star Wars trappings and it feels unique. Like it's almost got a Western feel, but not quite Western.
Yeah.
But you know, it is weird that almost 2 weeks, it's exactly 2 weeks before it comes out, that, I mean, we have to go 2 weeks without reading anything because there's going to be spoilers out there for two weeks.
Did you see what I posted on social media today?
Yes, and I agree 100%. I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, people are already putting things out there.
Yeah, So for those of you who don't know, I'm Ice Cold Penguin on all social medias. I posted on my Instagram today a very passionately worded photo of just text basically telling everybody to zip it if you get a chance to see it early, that we have like 15 days and all this stuff. And then I was like, you know what, I bet a lot of people don't realize it's screening at Cannes and why it's so early. So I went on live on Twitter and I went live on Instagram explaining, you know, and like talking about it and why you can't post screenshots of people's reactions and stuff. Because like, okay, Mark, I know you know me. If I say I like something, that's going to immediately cloud your judgment because you know what I like.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And so like those kind of things. So it's, I don't know. I'm just really passionate about this whole thing. And we don't have a choice. We have 2 weeks, which it hasn't been like that for any other Star Wars movie. And then Bruce, your thing about Cannes, every other movie has come out in December. So there hasn't been a film festival for them to show it at.
True.
You know,
I just think that Star Wars is too good to be at a film festival. It's on its own. It's on its own pedestal. We don't need stinking freaking film festivals for Star Wars movies. They're better than that. Those things are for the people who are just like, look at my movie. Look at my movie. Recognize me. We're like, no, we're too good for that. We're like seniors in this high school.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Solo's had so many ups and downs.
Yeah.
I feel like everything they're doing is to try to say like, look, it doesn't suck.
The ship is stable. And it's not going down like Titanic.
This is a good sign. I totally agree with you. This is a good sign because if they're doing the premiere this early and they're going to show it at Cannes and all the press screenings and everything this early, they must have confidence in this because they don't want 2 weeks of people going, this movie sucked, don't go see it. And then two weeks afterwards it comes out, nobody goes to see it. But at the same time, we have to listen to 2 weeks of, this is a really good movie, you're going to like it. You just have to wait forever for it to come out.
Yeah, that'll be rough. And you know, I mean, a lot of people are going social media dark. I mean, I'm still on Twitter, but I'm only checking my notifications. I'm not scrolling through my feed. I muted a whole bunch of stuff. But the problem I was having is people screenshotting other people's reactions and then posting it and then not putting any hashtags in there for me to mute because I can't mute what's in the picture.
Yeah.
You know, so if they just go check this out and then it's just there, it's like, my eyes.
You evil, who would do this? You know how much this means to me. Yeah, no, that's well, if you guys have heard our last episode of Beyond the Films, that was kind of how I was going in the last movie. Like, I did not want to have any kind of spoiler tip my reaction to when I'm sitting there watching it because, you know, the current Luke was always my jam. So that was very important to me that I would like that going in. Whereas with this being Solo's past and this being a different Solo than I'm used to, I'm kind of like, I'm a little more open to whatever they do because I got the Devil May Care attitude at this point. I'm like, it's not my Han, but I'm willing to see where this Han goes. It's kind of like a Miles Morales. Like, he ain't my Spider-Man, but I also collect his stuff because I enjoy that story. But I don't feel as invested in this one as I was the last one. So I'm not as worried about spoilers. But man, that 6 months leading up to that last one, I went bunker crazy. I was like, I don't want to see it. I don't want to know.
Yeah, well, I don't think there's going to be many spoil, like any big surprises, because if there was, like,
I don't know. And the only reason I'm saying this is from the red carpet, someone, I don't remember who it was. I really don't. I don't remember what interview it was, said the ending is going to blow your mind. So,
okay.
I don't know. And you're talking to somebody who does not read rumors, who doesn't read theories, who doesn't read anything. I don't read anything. So the only information I have is what I've seen directly given to me from Lucasfilm. So I don't know what that means, but you know, I'm open to it and I'm really excited for this one. Last Shot has me pumped for this movie. Yeah. Donald Glover as Lando I'm so excited for,
it's been my highlight from the beginning. I mean, they couldn't have picked a better person to play that character.
Yeah, and then Donald Glover and Billy Dee Williams both show up on the red carpet last night, both wearing red. They didn't even talk to each other.
I had to double check on that because I thought at first that they were wearing the same outfit. And I was like, that's brilliant. And then I look and I'm like, oh, that's even more brilliant because of the fact that they didn't even think about it. Like, if somebody did that on purpose, kudos, you get a raise. But fate making that happen, that's the Force, baby.
Yeah,
they're looking at each other and it's like, yeah, we both made the right call, we know red is for the red carpet. Yes,
see, my big question, the thing that's weighing on my mind, because my other job, I work at the theater, is what's the popcorn bucket gonna look like? I mean, right now we've got the popcorn buckets. We had the Death Star popcorn bucket before. I want a Millennium Falcon popcorn bucket. I'm ready. Like,
that's a Disney Parks thing, though, right?
Right? It usually is. So what could they give us for this that would fit with the movie?
It would have to be a Falcon, but like then you wouldn't get much popcorn because it's like flat.
It would work maybe for the kids' meal where they give you the little tray. Like, this ain't enough. What is this kibble? I want popcorn with butter. This is going to get all over my lap. But yeah, I have not seen anything in that regard.
Well, you don't want to. And then we got 2 weeks of trying to avoid what the popcorn bucket's going to look like. How are you going to keep away from knowing that? The spoilers of that. Oh my gosh. I heard when you get to the end of the popcorn bucket, it will blow your mind.
Yeah, because you're out of popcorn, and it was in a Millennium Falcon.
So you could take it home and attach it to your toy. You can make all of them that.
This is why you blew your mind when you got to the end of the popcorn bucket, because it was so flat, there was hardly any popcorn in there, and you're 10 minutes into the movie, and you're like, I'm out.
That's me and my soda with the trailers. I've got to go and refill my soda twice before the trailers are over. And everybody's like, dude, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm feeding three kids. Like, they're all sipping off my soda.
You know what my memory of The Last Jedi is? When I went to see it the opening night, they were advertising Cheetos popcorn, and I still haven't tried it. And I'm like, want to try it so bad. Ever since I saw The Last Jedi, I'm like, I want to try Cheetos popcorn.
You know what Cheetos popcorn is, Bruce?
It's
the little
popcorn.
Cheetos at the bottom of the bag. That's what it is.
Oh, man.
No, it's popcorn with Cheetos seasoning on it, and they mix a few bits of Cheetos in there with
it. That's gross.
I think it's sounds wonderful.
That's just as bad as Doritos tacos at Taco Bell.
I like those too. Like Sour Patch Kids ice cream. Like, sounds like a good idea until you taste it.
No, that doesn't sound like a good idea at all.
No, but that's why they don't have it at cans, because it's not good. So we got a lot to talk about today. So we've got our news stuff we got through, but you know, we don't really have much Solo. I'm trying to stay away from doing Solo. I mean, this is about as much as you're going to get of Solo on this show, at least on this episode. The next week's show is going to be all us being pumped about Solo. But for now, we're going to do some news and Boba's Band. We have that coming up. And then later in the feature, we have John Mills and Matthew Rushing from Aggressive Negotiations. They are going to talk about the future of Star Wars, what we think is what's coming out in the new movies and TV shows and that sort of thing. And speaking of new TV shows, Jon Favreau, it was announced that he has a new Star Wars TV series that he's making for the new Disney app that's coming out next year with all the streaming video content that they're going to have on that app, including this Star Wars series. And we get some bits of information from him on the red carpet about this new TV show. That's going to come on after the feature. That's at the end of the show. So as of right now, one thing I want to mention from last week's show is that we were questioning, how do we get hold of those dice that Han Solo has on the Millennium Falcon? Well, this doesn't necessarily get you the dice, but come to find out, Denny's reached out to us and said, hey, we actually have a dice sweepstakes online. You can roll Han Solo's dice and win prizes. How awesome is that?
Man, nice. That sounds really cool. As long as it's got a better supply than the cups, because when I went to Denny's, they were out.
Yeah, so I have the dice in two forms. One would be on my pair of Han Solo collection pants from Her Universe. The dice are printed. And then there's also a necklace at Hot Topic that has a little falcon and the dice hanging from it. So
that's good to know. I'm going to do that sure.
Are we talking like close to replica size, or are they like more like charm size?
Small.
Okay. I'm a sucker for replicas. Like I don't think I can pull it out in time here, but I'll just take the whole CD case off with it because I don't care. I've got the Minas Tirith Hobbit key, and I've got Cotton Jock Sparrow's key. Like, I stupid little.
So
things.
You know what I could do for you? I could get a pair of dice, spray paint them gold, and hot glue a chain to them, and then you can have some dice.
Well, I was thinking about that because of the dice. Those 3x75 figures. I was like, oh, is that the same symbols? Like, I actually pulled them out. Like, they're close, but not quite.
Well, you can really see those symbols real well on the online game at Denny's. Just go to Denny's.com and you'll see it there where to click in to do it. And you roll the dice. You have three chances. And the cool thing is there's two grand prize winners that if they roll the right thing on the dice, there's two grand prize winners, but there is 52,272 instant prize winners. So there's a good chance you could be one of those 52,272 prize winners. So you need to check that out. So it's called the Smuggler's Dice Game at Denny's.com. You don't have to eat anything off the website, but there's enough there that makes you hungry that you want to go to Denny's and eat something. And especially go there instead of Subway. But
if you go on Tuesday, kids eat free.
Kids eat free. And
do
this,
I count as a kid since I'm the size of one?
Don't make them ask your age. Be like, that's ageist.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't.
I know that word.
Oh,
I'm 11, and I know what that word means.
Well, there is something bad about the whole Denny's thing. You have to be in the United States to do it. You can't do it anywhere else in the world. It's just in the States, and it's to June 25th.
They are so mean to other countries.
They're like, we've got a small little bubble, and our circle responsibility does not exit our bubble. I mean, I wish it did, because when your bubble doesn't extend to our bubble, it hurts my feelings. There's some books from the UK I still wish I had. I actually had to order Karen Travis's The Clone Wars in paperback from you guys over there, because we just couldn't get a card copy over here in the US. But hey, you know, usually it's the other way around. And I agree, it's not fair.
Yeah, but you get to do the Denny's game, the Smuggler's Dice. They can't.
Again, it's not fair. I'm sorry, guys.
You get a chance to win free food from Denny's, Fandango movie codes that you can win prizes, a movie poster signed by Alden Ehrenreich and Donald Glover, all that fun stuff right there. So there you go. I say we do.
I just hope that Donald Glover says, "I'm the smoothest Lando since the last one."
That's fine.
And wear red when he says it, too.
Signed in red.
Let's go on to the news.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
All right, Mark, what's the first story we got here?
Well, the first story actually got shifted around because I felt like the second story needed to come up to the pinnacle of the top of the mountain here because of who we had with us today, in fact. Because if you don't know, you should know that Teresa also hosts one of our second Airborne podcasts, Star Wars Bookworms. With
yeah, let me ask you about that, because I listen to both of your shows. Mm-hmm. I have T-shirts from both of your shows, and which one is the official Expanded Universe Legends podcast of Star Wars Report?
That's a technicality.
Beyond the Films.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. Why? Technically, because okay. Riley said it when he recorded it.
So, all right, Mark, let's give them some background. Okay, so, Mark, you guys started Beyond the Films...
2012, the beginning of the year.
Okay, so... Aaron and I started Bookworms not to compete with Beyond the Films. Like we've all said that, and we talked with Mark and everything. We were like, we're not competing. We just wanted to talk about books. And Nathan and Mark talk about all kinds of stuff that Aaron and I won't ever talk about, ever. And
we did start to get mostly comics for a while, and we just went back to our basics.
Yeah. So Aaron and I developed a system that we would review all the newer stuff that was coming out. We weren't really going to go backwards into the EU. It was basically when we started, we were starting with new releases at that point. Mm-hmm. And we review all books and comics. Well, not all, but books and comics, new releases, and our spoiler policy is 1 month. So we try to record them, you know, once they've been out for a month, and we've gotten behind, but like that was the plan. And so we never went back. So whereas Beyond the Films has covered a lot of the older EU, mm-hmm. we have never done that. And we just kind of kept moving forward. And so now we are sort of known as the ones that cover all of the current stuff. And we cover the DK stuff, we cover the Disney publishing stuff, we cover junior novels, middle grade, we're going to be doing Ashley Eckstein's A True Universe, so things that Beyond the Films wouldn't necessarily talk about all the time.
Yeah, we would cover those in our year in review.
Yeah, so really, like, for EU, it's Beyond the Films, but if you want current canon, it's Bookworms.
Yeah, because I listen to both shows, and when I listen to Bookworms, yeah, it seems more of like some of the newer stuff. When I listen to Beyond the Films, it's like a Harvard class on EU stuff. And yes. I get lost and confused after a while. I'm like, I don't know what they're talking anymore. This is no, but it's really good because I've learned so much about the EU from that show. So it's
yeah.
But
what started out originally, it was going to be like, you know, the conversations that you would have with your friends about what's going on Twitter. Like, this happened and everybody blew up about it for 3 weeks, you know? And
yeah.
And then it, you know, we also wanted to cover all the older books and stuff. You know, I'm a huge fan of the New Jedi Order, as I always said. So eventually my goal is for me and Nathan to talk about those too, but I want to do it right. So we're kind of waiting, yeah. But we did get kind of pigeonholed there for a while where I just didn't have time to read as many books. So we started doing a lot more comics because it was easier for me while I was doing stuff with the kids to have a comic busted out, get through that and get it read real quick. And that's mm-hmm. when I discovered Audible. I was like, man, then I
yeah.
can, and I'm working at the theater, you know, moving around with a vacuum and listening to my books and stuff. But then I discovered this whole new realm of digesting books, because that's how Riley always did it, was audiobooks. And I found I had a much harder time tracking with an audiobook than I would reading the regular book. So I would listen to the audiobook four or five times And even then I was like, man, I still feel like there are parts that I miss. Like I'd be on that fifth time, I'm like, I don't remember this. Like, cause I would, when I'm reading my books, I would often set the book down and kind of just ponder on all these little random things and just
you do about, a lot of pondering.
I do a lot of pondering.
I count how many times you say ponder on Beyond the Films, just so you know that.
I don't do it as much as I do on the page, like today's ponder kind of thing. But yeah, right. I'm always thinking about like how they could have done this or done that. And so
do you know that anybody listening to this right now could get a free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/trek? That's my other show.
Whoa.
Audible. No, wait. audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report. Star Wars Report.
So, he's not lying.
Yeah. So as Mark was talking about audiobooks, that's actually how I digest most of my books is through audiobooks as well. Just in driving or if I'm taking a shower, I connect my phone to my Bluetooth speaker and I'm in there for like half an hour and I get, you know, a good chunk of it done. But I've actually discovered what I call the hybrid method, which is I listen, then I pick up my book and I read a few chapters and then I listen. And so I kind of get both worlds sometimes. The audiobooks have been fun because then when we record our reviews, we can review the audiobook as well, which is really cool. And the audiobook for Last Shot is freaking fabulous. And we haven't talked about that on Bookworms yet. That'll actually be on our next episode. But Bruce, since you were asking, Bookworms started in February of 2013. And that was when we used to have Josh Stolt on all the time. And our first book review was Scoundrels. And our first comic review was Dawn of the Jedi Force Storm, Volume 1. So that was where we started. And then we started doing interviews. And see, that's another thing. Beyond the Films doesn't really do interviews as much. And so we do author interviews and we do, you know, other things like that. So that's something else that we have that's different.
Well, it's
and,
good that you're both here because we actually have book stuff to talk about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what, go. What is it,
and before we get to that, though, I wanted to touch on something you were talking about with the audiobooks. Since the new canon took over, they have been experimenting more with the audiobooks, bringing in additional narrators and stuff, having character authors. I mean, it's been fun.
It's a full production.
Yeah, it's been really cool. They've really pushed the envelope. I mean, it seems like the first thing they did was brought in Ashley Eckstein to do Ahsoka Tano book. Yeah. That was a brilliant move. So, yeah, and then this last one, even Daniel Older, I believe, got to get in on the role with that one.
I love his voice, man. His voice is a great audiobook voice.
Awesome.
I plan on telling him that in person when I see him one day.
Who's this we'll again?
Be, interviewing him here recently in the 22nd. I'll be talking with him.
So yeah. So
can
Daniel,
I crash that?
He
possibly.
Possibly. Yeah. So wait, did he reads the audiobook?
He reads part of it. There's three. Oh. There's three narrators. There's Mark Thompson, Daniel Jose Older, and January Lavoie.
She's awesome.
And
too.
They basically are each narrating a different part of the timeline because Last Shot takes place in three separate times.
Right.
And so Mark Thompson has the current now. January Lavoie has Lando about 15 years ago, and Daniel Jose Older has Han's story 10 years ago.
Interesting.
In the timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the chapter divides on those really cool because they're not chapter titled. They've got emblems. And so when you've got the card and the gun, it's both Lando and Han in the present. When you've got the gun, it's Han at 10 years. And when you got just the cards, it's Lando at 15. I was like,
yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. But anyway, back to the news that we have. There is a new Flight of the Falcon book series debuting this fall. StarWars.com says she may not look like much, but the Millennium Falcon has got it where it counts. And this fall, StarWars.com can exclusively announce that kids of all ages will get their chance to climb aboard and make the jump to hyperspace with a new series of stories, Flight of the Falcon, from Lucasfilm Publishing. Now, this is interesting because they're going to not just be doing it for all ages. There are going to be just a couple different stories here, but it sounds like each one is going to be aimed at different groups. In time for Star Wars Read Day in October, the series of books and comics, so not just books, but books and comics, that's kind of cool, about the fastest hunk of junk in galaxy, the Millennium Falcon, will help connect different eras of Star Wars storytelling through the adventures aboard our beloved ship. Each fiction title will include a map to trace the literal flight path and help readers understand the time and place where each story is set.
The time and place.
That is awesome. I mean, you know, as a fan of times being located down, that was something I always wanted from the New Jedi Order. They would give you little maps and stuff.
Yes.
So I love the idea of getting back to that. I kind of wish though that it wasn't just more of the younger kid books. I hope they do that with even the adult books because that's just brilliant in general. We've got the new character, Basine Natal. Well, she's not new. She's the spy seen on Takodana in The Force Awakens. She's on the hunt for the Falcon, and her intel leads her across the galaxy to Batu. Where's that, Teresa?
It's Walt Disney World and Disneyland.
Yeah, a remote outpost on the galaxy's edge. In order to find the Falcon, she must learn all she can about the infamous YT-1300 freighter, the ship that countless bounty hunters and Imperials have almost caught over the years. They go on from there. They say these tales are going to take us from the time just before Star Wars, Solo, A Star Wars Story, when Lando and L3 had the Falcon, through the original trilogy and into the new trilogy, ending with the incredible world of Batuu. We're going to also have characters like Hondo, Anaka is showing up, Han and Chewie. I know. Like, when I saw Hondo was in here, my mind kind of like did a little, I had to re-ratchet that back, read it again. Like, whoa, Hondo, like, could Hondo have like had the title at one point? Like that.
Oh my God.
I can't wait.
Here's the thing. The thing about this that just pumps me up is I always have a problem with like kid books versus adult books. I have a problem with that because you know what? Some of the books I've enjoyed the most have been kid books. Yep. Like the Servants of the Empire series by Jason Fry is outstanding. Mm-hmm. It's so good. And it's a story that Star Wars Rebels fans are missing if they haven't read it, and they should. And like YA books have been some of the best books that we have gotten in the new canon. So it's,
amen. Well, so that's because you look like a kid.
No. They're dealing with topics.
No, I agree with you. I think some of the YAs topics are better than the adult ones in most cases.
Well, and I'm really looking forward to Most Wanted by Ray Carson.
Yeah.
Which is going to be, you know, tied with Solo. But anyway, the Flight of the Falcon book series, like, I'm so looking forward to it because I just think it's going to be a pure fun ride in the books. And sometimes that's what we need. We don't need something that's taking itself so seriously all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm pumped.
No, think about like Jude Watson's book from Legends, like that three book series that was all one big series. It's a hidden gem in there. I mean, and the new stuff, since the new canon switched over, those have been telling the hard hitting stories. You're absolutely right. I mean, Lost Stars.
Oh God, Lost Stars, my heart.
Oh. What's the other one?
Rebel Rising.
Yes, Rebel Rising
by Beth Revis.
Yeah. Yes, I could only think of her last name. I'm like, God, that was a great one.
That's a great book.
Yeah, I think so. Is
Leia, Princess of Alderaan?
Yes,
is fantastic. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
And it's all these women writers, and it's like, yes, not that that's an issue.
Yeah. So and this one's going to have there's going to be a Luke and Leia adventure, which the interesting thing on that is it sounds like they steal the Falcon. I'm like,
I know, right?
Like how it's not even so much that they steal the Falcon. I want to know more about when they get back and have to talk to Han. Like, that's going to be a great.
But like, here's the great thing. We just got a Forces of Destiny episode with Luke and Leia and the, you know, them just being brother and sister. And it's like, now we're going to get a story in a book about them being brother and sister and being twins and like the twin connection and everything. That's so exciting.
Yeah. So cool. I kind of hope that we get something with Leia, you know, learning something about the Force. I mean, that was one of the things I loved about the New Jedi Order, is that she finally set down politics and embraced the Jedi heritage and stuff. So when we had that reset, I was really looking forward to them exploring that more. And then what we ended up getting, like, it wasn't quite what I was hoping for Leia. So I would like to see in this era, while they're still kind of fresh, like maybe Luke trying to push that on her more and having her like experiment a little bit. Like, I think that'd be a great opportunity in that regard, since it doesn't seem to be the main focus of her character story arc later down the road.
Yeah. Maybe it's like they're on the Falcon together and Luke is training Leia and he keeps pushing her out of the Falcon. So she gets used to practicing being in space and returning back to the ship. So by the time we get to The Last Jedi, she's an expert at that.
I thought you were meaning like pushing her down the ramp with a Force push, like, can't get in, can't get in.
No, I'm talking when they're in space.
Oh, that's great.
How Leia developed that skill.
You know, it's like when you push, you know, your kid in the pool to teach him to swim. It's like that. He's teaching Leia how to space swim.
That's no fun.
I don't recall that ever occurring to me.
That's as fun as seeing Admiral Akbar show up in a movie and then having him, you know,
murdered,
get launched out the side of the ship real
quick. Ooh, Akbar. You know? We have a story about Akbar.
Yeah, Gary Whitta on exploring the Force and giving Ackbar his moment in Marvel's Star Wars The Last Jedi comic. That's StarWars.com provides this to us. They talk about the adaptation by Gary Whitta. The artist is Michael Walsh. They're going to have some new scenes, some new perspectives into the story, a jazz rift. Sounds interesting. They're going to add a select new scenes and perspectives into the story, as I've already said. The beats here, they're going to have these moments where things aren't necessary to the story that are in the film that you might not see in the comic, because I do have to do a shorthand version of things to make it all fit. And at the same time, I do want to have room to do some of my own stuff, like the very first scene in issue one of the comic is an entirely original scene that is not in the film or in any version of The Last Jedi. I think every issue has at least one thing like that.
See, that's Gary Whitta saying that.
Yes, we don't get to see Luke's dream where he, you know, just was a moisture farmer.
I guess not. No.
That was the best right there.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, goes on. When I went on to the set of The Force Awakens, the first thing I had to do was put on the Admiral Ackbar mask, and I did. It was a big deal, and I've always loved that character. It was kind of saddened, though, when he dies so quickly. And so in the issue I'm working on right now, I'm just trying to find a space just to give him a little bit of a moment before he dies, just put the focus on him for a moment. Again, that it doesn't undermine. So I like the fact that he's conscious of the fact that he wants to pay that tribute to the character but not undermine the story and the momentum, which right. I think moving forward for other, you know, authors and other writers and stuff, like, that's important. You know, you don't want to undermine. But at the same time, I feel like what he's doing here is something that the fans are kind of demanding. Like, a lot of people felt like what happened to Ackbar was kind of a slight against a fan favorite character. Some people would say, you know, we don't need to have that kind of fan service. And other fans were like, I kind of want that service, please.
Yeah. Well, and this kind of reminds me of the book From a Certain Point of View. It's like doing The Last Jedi, but we're getting different scenes and different points of views of characters that weren't in The Last Jedi. So it's the same story, but just a little different take and different points of view throughout. So I think it's going to be really interesting. I think I'm a little more stoked about this now than I was the novelization, because I knew the novelization was going to have some cut scenes and some additional stuff, which I love, but this is going to give us something that I wasn't expecting. And that's from, like I said, different angles, like, you know, focus on Ackbar. And then later there's something he mentions about Maz Kanata, and we see her conversation with Poe and Finn, but it's from where she is and she's watching them as opposed to the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He says a couple different things. Like, he mentions about Rogue One. Some of the very, very early versions of Rogue One that I worked on had a bit more Jedi and Force stuff in there that we eventually realized was needed or appropriate for that story, but it ended up getting moved aside. And we found other interesting ways to get the Force in there without making it a big deal. He also mentions with The Last Jedi, and I think this one's kind of interesting. He says, I think there's a whole idea that you should never meet your heroes because they never turn out to be who you think they're going to be. It's a great line from Firefly when Malcolm Reynolds says, everyone who's ever had a statue built of them was some kind of son of a beep or other, which is a great line. If you've ever seen that episode, it's a great one. It's all about the hero from Canton Jane. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. And I think Ryan was trying to say that in the same way. There's a really interesting subtext in the movies about how the image and the heroes that we have, the version that you look at when you look up at the statue, the myth that gets built around the man, is often very different of the reality of the man himself, who is often tortured and complex and very different from the version of the myth or the mythologized or idealized version of that character that you've built up in your mind. So
like,
I think
Walt Disney.
Really, yeah, exactly. yes. So I think there's a lot of really, really smart stuff going on there. That kind of commentary, he says, I'm old enough to recognize Luke Skywalker, the old Luke Skywalker, in myself. You know, as I get older, you start thinking more about the choices you've made and the regrets that you have. You start thinking more about the flaws, the mistakes you've made in your life. And I think it's a very mature and a very sophisticated way to think about the growth of that character, rather than just the superhero version of him, the idolized version of him that I think some fans might have wanted to see. And which do I say, if you want to see that, check out Legends. They got one that's similar to that. Also flawed, but also very superhero.
Yeah, I really liked his explanation there, because that is how it's true. I'm not going to get into it because I'll probably start crying, but
oh, please get into it.
No. it's not quite the same thing, but I have had people that I idolized and who were my heroes, and over time there have things have been revealed about those people or something that they've done that has basically destroyed that. And I'm not saying that this is the same as Luke. I don't think Luke has a bad reputation, but the point is that, you know, your heroes aren't perfect and they're just like everybody else. And yeah, sometimes when you get older, there's just, you know, you look back at things and you felt like you could change the world, and then you realize maybe you couldn't, and maybe you even messed up. And I feel like that's what Luke is going through in The Last Jedi.
Things tarnish with age, and nothing ages more than time and distance.
The wisdom of Mark Herrmann.
There you go. Yeah. There's my two cents.
And you can see him at Subway at any time.
That's right. That's right. I'll be there all day from 9 through 1:30. Yeah. In the morning. Star Wars Battlefront 2 announces a new Han Solo season. Now, Teresa, we have pre-scanned this. There's no spoilers here. So at least, Bruce, if there are, we're going to reach to the internet and kick you. Starting May 16th, new content in Battlefront 2 plays homage to the original trilogy with additions from Solo, a Star Wars story planned for June. Classic Han means a return to Jabba's palace with a map of the gangster's Tatooine hangout, which you may remember from the first one. They'll be available in Blast, Hero Showdown, or the Heroes versus Villains. Players can navigate Jabba's abode and try to talk their way out of a tight spot, or risk becoming a part of the scenery encased in carbonite.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So, Teresa, do you play Battlefront 2?
No. I'm not a big first-person shooter game. They make me dizzy.
But you can put it in a third person.
I just don't own it. Although I hear there's an Ewok thing now.
Oh, it's glorious. But the problem is I've heard that's limited time. I've only played it once, but they need to make it permanent because it's creepy.
Yeah, I think it's more of, I don't even have time to play Little Big Planet, which is like my favorite game. So with everything else I have going on, I don't have enough time. Now, if Battlefront 2 was on my phone, like right? Emoji Blitz, which is like my favorite game right now, it's a Disney game. And also Harry Potter Mystery, the new Harry Potter game on my phone, then I'd play it more.
Now, oh my gosh, my daughter's always playing
game
that.
Programmers out there, because Teresa's on to something here. I think at a certain age point, whether you have kids or not, you just become really busy where some of the things that you used to have extra free time for before you got out of school and stuff, that you just, they're the sacrifices you make. For me, gaming was that. And I didn't realize it until I went back to play with my son. My son's playing Fortnite. My son is good at Fortnite. Like, my son's been killed by Ninja. Now, if you know anything about Fortnite, you're like him. Ninja killed me! Like, he's like the number one player of Fortnite right now. So my son getting third with that guy, like, that was, I heard all about it. I play, and the kids on the thing are going, look at this noob. Like, I'm like, what am I doing wrong? Apparently, you can't run in the game because it puts up a little dust cloud and you get sniped from a mile away. That's why I was dying every 5 seconds. But yeah, so like, I felt so anti what I used to be. I was like a total gamer. Like, that was my thing. And now I'm like, man, I just, if I play any game, it's like Teresa. When I have time on my phone, I pull out, I'll play some Risk, maybe some chess. I was playing KOTOR when I had that on my phone for a while. Mm-hmm. That was pretty awesome. But they definitely, like, there's a game called Battleground Unknown, something like the PUBG is what they call it. But there's a mobile version of that, and I had it on my phone for a little while until I wanted to keep other apps, and I had to cut that one out. But that, there's definitely a market for people like me and Teresa where we don't have the time. We would love to be able to have that time, but we're just on the go. We're not next to our home phone and our home TV with our gaming system. And now you can't play like you used to in my day. You know, I'm a Goldeneye kid. You know, sit down and we play it on the
splits. Paintball mode.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Big head paintball. Yeah, you know, or slaps only. But now I can't play multiplayer with my son. That drove me nuts when I got the first Battlefront. I wanted to go out and do the spaceship battles with him, and I couldn't. We can only do the ones where the points didn't count, and that's no fun. It feels like you're playing for no progress. And so it got to that point where I would rather watch him play and get my character farther than me actually play with him, because we weren't actually progressing the characters together. And it just, it wasn't fun because those levels weren't the ones that were available for the multiplayer. So
yeah,
I'm like, man, you guys need to make a online hand portable game for us.
I was a big gamer for a long time, and I had like every system and all this stuff. And like, it was my thing. Like I played games, and now I don't really, I mean, if I get a chance to, I still will PC game, and I'm a big Sims. I've always been a simulation game and a platform gamer. So I still play the Sims. I have Sims 4 on my Mac now, and I can do that. But then Sims Mobile came out, and I was like, same thing.
that's my wife. And my
not daughter. Really, not really the same thing, but you know, I mean, I'm more likely to play something on my phone than I am on a console, just because I don't want to turn it on and go through the whole thing.
Right. It takes forever to boot up and all that. Yeah. Well, it's tough for me too, because, you know, now that, you know, I'm married, I have kids, and my, you know, and it's like, we're busy as a family. I'm busy doing stuff and busy doing stuff like this. I travel and all that. And then it's like, what little time I would have to game, you know, they may be on the gaming console, or they're watching the TV that the console is on. And I mean, so I got some game. I don't even remember what it was now. I just know I remember getting a game and I played it once, and I've never touched it since, because I just never get a chance. I don't have time. Mm-hmm. But you know, the whole thing about loading, it's the same thing of like Blu-ray and DVD. You know, it's like, if I want to watch a movie, I prefer having the digital version because it starts immediately, as opposed to waiting for the disc to load up, and then it plays through certain trailers. It drives me crazy. I'm so impatient. The older I get, I get more impatient, because everything is quicker now. And so I expect things here and now, and I can't stand commercials, because everything I watch now is like through Netflix, and I spend the extra money for Hulu for no commercials and all that. When I turn on regular TV and I see a commercial, I'm like, what the heck is this crap? Why would anybody want this?
Can I fast forward? I will pause, go to the bathroom, so when I come back, I can fast forward through commercials. Well, then
there's a lot of commercials. You must be going to the bathroom a lot, because they're on all the time. When I switch to a TV channel, it's always commercials. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, if I see anything that I've got on DVD or streaming, I'm like, why are we watching this on cable right now?
Right.
Yeah. Well, so, and then the thing is with your gaming systems, you haven't booted them up for a while, and then you finally do, and then it's like update. And then you're like, then you can't even play the game you wanted to play because it has 5 hours of updates or
not enough room, because your son's got all the Lego games on your system. You're like, oh, come on.
Well, I'm going
to the games I want to play. And I would just like to throw a pitch out to Sony real quick. I need Little Big Planet on my phone. Thank you.
Well, yeah. And I know Sony listens to the show. So
I know. That's why I said it.
That's right.
It's a guy named Sony. It's not the company.
Yeah. But maybe he can make it happen.
Always talking to me. Why are you talking to me? I don't even know. Why do I even listen to the show? Bobby, he tells me I'm on the show. I keep listening.
See, that's Sony right there. Sony and his wife Cher. I guess, yeah, we're going to go into Boba's Bounty, so I assume no one has watched, or no one's going to say that we're doing any gaming on this week's Boba's Bounty. So here's Boba's Bounty.
He's worth a lot to me. As you wish.
So, Mark, Boba's Bounty, what do you got for us?
So, I have got an issue.
Yeah, I know, but
issues. My issue here deals with an issue of a comic.
Uh-oh.
So I get my Star Wars comics, right? I used to be a physical guy. I had all my Star Wars Legends comics in the, you know, got one. Maybe.
Oh, I thought you meant you used to work out a lot when you said you were a physical guy.
No.
Okay.
No.
Now that we cleared that up.
We're not talking mental issues. We're talking comic issues. When the Disney canon switch happened, it was an opportunity for me to step back from getting single trade or single issues and go to the trades.
Yeah.
Okay. So the downside there is you had to wait a little bit longer and then you would get them. So I did that for a little bit. I got a small little trade collection coming. And then I kind of, you know, realized Marvel was cranking out comics pretty fast and hard and heavy. And it was pretty spendy. And I also read Spider-Man comics and stuff. And Nate's got comics that he's doing and stuff, because he's a timeliner and he gets things in triplicate. So he gets a digital copy, then a physical copy later when that one comes, because he likes his instant gratification of the digital. So he gets two digital copies. So Nate sends me the codes for his physical ones. So I've been reading my Star Wars comics that way. And so I've been getting into Dr. Aphra and stuff, and he gives me the code for number 18, and something happened. It's not working. It's saying it's already been redeemed, even though it hasn't. So I'm missing an issue of Dr. Aphra. And if you don't read Dr. Aphra, well, I don't want to say shame on you, but shame on you. You should. It's really good. But so I didn't have this copy, and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to get it. So I went down to the comic book store, and I was just like, I don't even care that I don't have the rest of the series in physical copy. I'm buying Dr. Aphra number 18, remastered part 5, because it's where Aphra captures Hera. Yeah, Hera Syndulla herself. Yeah. So I had to get that copy just so I could put that physical code in, or the digital code in, so I could have the full collection of that. And of course, it's a beautiful physical copy. So I'm going to be putting that up on the shelf behind me with my Black Series Hera figure, like I did my Ventress comic that I've got behind the old Unleashed figure behind me. It's just a cover you can't not put on display. It's beautiful.
Dang. Well, that's a very complicated issue you had there.
Yeah. And I take everything around the world. Sorry about that. So
well, speaking of comics, and this isn't really my Boba's Bounty, but I'll just mention real briefly, I did go for Free Comic Book Day, but we had a crawfish boil we were at earlier in the day, so I didn't get to the comic book store till later, and they are already out of the Star Wars Adventures free comic, so I didn't get that like I wanted to, but oh well. Aww. Things happen.
Neither did I.
Yeah. So what my Boba's Bounty is, and this isn't really something I got or anything. This is, you guys probably saw this. I just want to bring it up. So I saw the poll on StarWars.com about what your favorite Star Wars movie is. And so for the longest time, my favorite Star Wars movie was, and is very close to being again, The Empire Strikes Back.
Wow.
But in 2005, what was that? Anyway,
that was Be Original. Everybody's.
Well, no, but I said it's not anymore because in 2005, my favorite movie became Revenge of the Sith and still is. So I voted for it. And this poll has been interesting to me because, of course, the one that's leading right now as of this recording on May 11th is The Empire Strikes Back at 41%. And then right now, Revenge of the Sith is at number 2 at 21%. And then Last Jedi is at 15%. What interests me, first of all, is The Last Jedi is at 15%. But when I looked a few days ago, The Empire Strikes Back and Last Jedi were neck and neck for one.
Oh, gosh.
So
that's crazy.
It is. But, you know, The Force Awakens only has 2%, which I thought that would have a lot more.
Yeah, I don't know. That's weird. It's on. Plus, it's also about all who's voting in this thing anyway.
Right.
Because it's not necessarily, I don't know.
It's not scientific.
Where's Return of the Jedi at?
Return of the Jedi is at 7%. So this is how it is. It's 41% Empire Strikes Back, 21% Revenge of the Sith, 15% is Last Jedi. Then we have tied A New Hope and Return of the Jedi at 7%. Then we have Rogue One at 4%. Then we have a tie between The Phantom Menace and The Force Awakens at 2%. And the last one is Attack of the Clones at 1%. But I've seen these kind of like vary. Like you could check this in a few hours from now and, you know, The Force Awakens could be higher or The Phantom Menace could be higher. I mean, they kind of, but I will, they kind of go back and forth, but The Empire Strikes Back, Revenge of the Sith, and Last Jedi have always been in the top three since
I've been watching this. Oh, wow. That's cool, though. It's interesting. For sure.
Yeah, especially with the backlash of The Last Jedi we've been hearing from people.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like that Ewok thing of like everybody hates the Ewoks, but yet everybody's like, I love the Ewoks, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
And okay. We all like Porgs too.
We do. We all like Porgs, except for John Boyega. He does not. Okay, so mine, I would say my biggest thing right now is I got obsessed with the Her Universe Solo collection that came out at Hot Topic, Torrid, and the Her Universe website because it's 70s inspired fashion and that is my complete jam. And I wasn't alive in the 70s, but that's my thing. Like, I love bell bottom pants. I love striped shirts. I love, you know, just, I don't know, hippie flowy stuff. And I have spent an enormous amount of money and own almost the entire collection. Every single piece. So that's probably been my biggest thing right now is we are in a really cool time for geek fashion stuff. And there's like all kinds of geek swimwear this year, which is new. That hasn't been done before. So I'm pumped. And I just found a Mickey Mouse pool float. That's like just the Mickey head that I want to get.
Oh, it's like, wait. So the pool float is a Mickey head?
It's just so like the ears. So it's just the silhouette, like the, you know, it's just the silhouette of the ears.
I was picturing like his face and like you sit in his mouth or something.
No, that would be cool too. But no, it's just the outline of like the three circles, you know?
Yeah.
Really cool. Those are at Target, by the way. You can get those. They have different designs. But yeah, like Han Solo clothes. It's the best.
That's great. So you're gonna wear one of those at the premiere when you go see it on that Thursday?
I'm gonna wear my Solo jeans that have the smuggler's dice, and then on the back pockets they have a falcon with a rainbow trail behind it going across the pockets, with my shirt that has rainbow stripes on the sleeves and a rainbow stripe behind the falcon on the front, and on the back it says Kessel Crew. Cool. So that's what I'm going to wear on to our Thursday showing of it. Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
Totally.
Well, for those who are wondering why Mark is so quiet, he lost his internet connection.
Mm-hmm.
So he's resetting his modem right now.
Yeah, we lost Mark temporarily.
It's sad.
Well, here's something else I can talk about a little bit. I mean, it's not really a Boba's Bounty thing, but it's relevant. And we were talking about books. Ashley Eckstein released her first book ever. It's called It's Your Universe. And everybody needs to go buy this. Everybody needs to go buy this and support Ashley. She wrote this herself. She did start out with another writer named Stacey Kravitz. And then Ashley actually locked herself up in a room for like 4 or 5 days. And she wrote her book. And
in 4 to 5 days? That's incredible.
She did nothing else but write. Like, she just locked herself away. That's what she said in an interview I saw. And she has all these amazing Star Wars and Disney references in it. And yes, it's geared towards young girls on how to make your dreams come true and how to be positive. But you know what? It fits for everybody. And there's these journal pages in there where she gives you prompts of like, okay, now make your list of all the things that you love about yourself. Like things that people actually need, you know, sometimes. And the art by Ashley Taylor is amazing. And I can't wait to see her on her book tour. She's coming to Texas in June. So I'm going to go see her. But she tells her story and like all of the things that she accomplished, but also things that were her, you know, her mistakes and stuff that didn't go well, but in a way to teach everybody, or to inspire, I guess is a better word, to inspire people to continue reaching for their goals and for their dreams. And it's just so good. It's so good.
Now she has an audiobook where she's reading it.
She does. She has an audiobook that she narrates as well. And that is available on Audible right now.
Okay. Yeah. Cause you know, you can get a free one at audibletrial.com/Star Wars Report. Just saying. We hardly ever mention that, but Audible keeps coming up today. So might as well. Right.
Yeah. Well, you brought me on. And so now we're talking about books, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. You should really go out and buy it. Because it's just good. And it's really pretty, and the art's great. Oh my gosh.
See, that's the thing. So that's the point of not getting the audiobook, is you want to see the art. So you should buy the physical book, right?
I think the audiobook is good, but I think what's really going to help her, and I'm a huge Ashley Eckstein fan, and she's my friend, and is I want everybody to go buy a book. I mean, they're not expensive. They're like, I think it's like $17.99. It's a good size. You're going to love the artwork in it. It's really cool. If you're a Star Wars fan and you like Ahsoka, you need to buy the book.
Everybody loves Ahsoka, right?
Some people didn't to begin with. I remember
to begin with. Yeah,
I remember the days. Even me, I didn't like Ahsoka at first. I was like, she's annoying, and then she was not annoying, and she was awesome. And
hey, amazing. Sky Guy, back in those days, right?
Sky Guy and Snips days.
Snips, yeah, I like the name.
I still miss Snips.
I know.
Sky Guy's kind of whatever, but Snips is fine. I like Sky Guy still.
I think in Rebels, when she confronted Vader, I wish he would have called her Snips as Vader's voice. That you know,
been, so you are still alive, Snips.
That would have been weird.
Well, I don't know. Mark is gone. We'll try to get him back before the end of the show. So we're going to go ahead and go into the feature that I mentioned about earlier in the show. We have Matt Rushing and John Mills from Aggressive Negotiations. We're going to talk about the future of the Star Wars movies and the TV series. And it's a really good in-depth conversation we talked about the other day. But before we jump into that, Teresa, where can people find you online?
Yeah, if you want to find me in anything that I'm doing, the best way is just to follow me on all social medias. I'm at Ice Cold Penguin. And no, I don't like leopard seals.
Okay.
They eat penguins. That was a joke. Haha.
Is that?
Yes, that's what the thing about leopard seals was. Yeah. They eat penguins. Yeah, so basically everything I do or that I post or anything, I always link on my Twitter, and I post a lot of stuff on Instagram as well. So Ice Cold Penguin is where you can find me.
Awesome. And what are all the shows? Because I can't keep track of them all.
Okay, so all of my podcasts with very brief synopsis. Fangirls Going Rogue, all female-hosted Star Wars podcasts, news, interviews, opinions, all kinds of stuff. Star Wars Bookworms, that's my Star Wars books and comics podcast. Disney Vault Talk, that's my Disney movie review show. We talk about the parks a little bit, but it's almost exclusively Disney movies. We are in the Pixar age now. So we next up, I think, is Toy Story 2. So we're still early on with that, but we have finished all of the animated Disney canon. Disney Vault Talk's Rebel Yell was our Star Wars Rebels show. So if you're rewatching Rebels, you can go through the show. I think we may be doing a show about Resistance, the new Star Wars animated show. I think we'll just do Rebel Yell Resistance or something like that, maybe. We're still talking about it.
Resistance Yell.
Resistance Yell, yes. And then Galactic Fashion, that is my Star Wars and geek fashion podcast that I do with Christy Morris. And it's pretty awesome. We've been having a really good time over there. And we also have a show that we don't do it very regularly, but it's called Fangirl Chat. It is available on all your podcatchers, and it's where we talk about other things other than Star Wars. We'll probably be doing an Infinity War episode of Fangirl Chat. But, yep, that's all of them, I think.
Yeah, you can't keep track of them all, man.
I don't know anymore.
I'm just glad you made time to come on our show.
Well, I did.
You did. Even though you were at a restaurant with bad service and they had to pay you to leave. And well, not to leave. They gave you money because you had such bad service that you come back again and then you went and walked by the lake and forgot about us.
Yes, that's true. The true story, guys. True story.
Well, thanks for coming on. And I'm sure we'll have you back again real soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye. This episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by Spiro. Now, Spiro, you can get an R2-D2, a BB-8, or a BB-9E droid that you can control with your own smart device. And you can get R2-D2 right now for $99. And BB-8 you can get for $79. These are really great deals. And we can actually do even better than that. When you go to checkout at Spiro.com/Star Wars, you can save an additional 10% just because you're a listener of the Star Wars Report. When you go to check out, use the code StarWarsReport10, and that's when you can receive the additional 10% off. Plus, you're also getting a free force band that helps you can control the droid. And these things are cute. You've seen them before. The little tiny R2-D2s and BB-8s out there. This is your chance to get it at a discount at 10% off. So we want to thank Spiro for their support of the Star Wars Report. And again, go visit Spiro.com/Star Wars. So what I want to do today is kind of delve into what we may be getting with future Star Wars movies. So we have Solo right over the horizon, and then we have Episode 9 coming after that in about a year and a half. And then what's going to happen after that? I mean, we know that there's more movies coming. We know there's a TV series. We, of course, Resistance is the animated series that's coming up, but we know there's a live action series coming also. So I'm bringing in two guys to help talk through this with me, and let's put our brains together and come up with some great ideas for some future Star Wars movies and what we'd like to see in those and even in the TV series. So with me from Aggressive Negotiations, a Parsec Award-winning podcast, we have Matt Rushing and John Mills. Thanks, guys, for joining us on the Star Wars Report.
Thank you for having us on. We're thrilled to be here, man.
Yeah,
it's good to talk to you, Bruce.
It's good that we're both here because you put us together and we have one brain. So it's like, I mean, yeah. If you'd only had one, you might not.
See, the thing is, now I'm thinking MC 900 Foot Jesus. If I only had a brain, that's playing in my head. So there you go.
Yes, I needed both sides of the brain because I couldn't choose which side I wanted on the show tonight. So I went with both.
It's a good call. It's a good call.
What, Matt?
No, I was thinking
you're scratching
about
your brain.
I am scratching my brain. I was thinking about your question, like, what are we going to be getting? You know, what might come up? And, you know, the most interesting thing is that we do know there are two different series that are going to come out film-wise. We've got what Rian Johnson is going to be doing, whatever that is. And I think it's supposedly a trilogy.
Yes,
trilogy. And then we have the Benioff and Weiss. Yeah,
right.
But we don't know what they're going to be doing yet either. So, and we don't know how many. I don't think they've specified that it's a trilogy or anything. It's just a series of films. So,
correct.
It could be, you know, more than that, or it could just be like a new saga and a whole new part. I mean, I think the most popular idea is that they're going to maybe do something in the Old Republic time period because it seems like it might fit their sensibilities, but I think that's just an easy, I think that's low-hanging fruit, honestly, when we're talking about them. I would hope that they might, I don't know, they could do it. It'd be great because I love the Old Republic games, but it does seem like that might be a little too niche.
Yeah, but don't you think they would probably steer away, do something a little different? I mean, if it's the Old Republic, I don't think they'd follow what the games did.
No, I they would probably just use bits and pieces of whatever anybody liked and then do their own, kind of like what comic book movies do.
I think that I challenge the idea that it would be too niche, because that's sort of the thing I think that people overlook, like with what everybody wants to ape the Marvel model. They want a series of incredibly successful films. They want streaming shows that people love. And they want comic books and books that everybody wants to read. And it all sort of works together. I don't think anything is too niche anymore with Star Wars. And I think that there's enough of a hunger for it that doing stuff that's a little bit out there isn't as big a risk. I think that if you're talking about the films, I think that restricts the time periods that they'll deal with. Because I don't think that the general audience would necessarily go for something set, 2,000 years before Anakin Skywalker or something like that. That's a hard sell, because it would necessitate everything looking and feeling so different from what it is. But at the same time, a series of films that maybe is, released off tempo with the other ones or something, but I have a sincere feeling that they're bringing in all of these people to do what Marvel does, where Coogler comes in and does his own thing with Black Panther, but it's still within the Marvel template and it still works there, and it's not too far off, but it's just a little bit spun off. But I think in terms of anything being very niche, I think they could do something like a streaming movie or like a series like, Sherlock. Those episodes were basically 2 hours each, so they could do a series like that. And in terms of the TV series, I think that's where they could truly go nuts with whatever they wanted to do.
The one thing that I would say, though, too, just about the idea of maybe doing an Old Republic movie series, is that one of the benefits of doing something like that is that it does remove you from the time period that we've already been in, and it gives you the freedom to do whatever you want. You don't have to pay attention to any part of canon or anything. You just, at this point, you get to make it all up for yourself. Your goal is just to then make it find a way to feel like Star Wars. So I can understand at least the desire to maybe to do something like that. So to me, it's just, it's a both and. Like, and I can see your point, John, of would it work better in a television series then where you maybe get to follow along and, you know, it is kind of more like the Marvel Netflix series that they've done.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something like a Game of Thrones on HBO where it is very serialized and we're following these characters and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think the goal, you're going to have to start to stretch Star Wars in a lot of the ways that I think I would say the Clone Wars did. And by just doing some crazy things, and but you're gonna the goal is always gonna be to try and still make it feel like Star Wars, but you don't want to keep just doing the same thing over and over again. Otherwise, people really will start to get burnt out on, you know, the Star Wars.
Well, here's a question actually. While we're talking about this, and you know, especially okay, Game of Thrones is known for, you know, pushing certain boundaries and everything. And even the Marvel Netflix shows go, you know, they become a little more mature, depending on, you know, I mean, Punisher was very, you know, gruesome. But do you think Star Wars in a TV environment would ever push that boundary? Like, do you think it would ever get to the point where they'd be like, you know what, we'll have a, you know, a lovemaking scene or something like hideously violent between two people happening? Like, you know, Punisher had some cringe moments. I loved the series, but there were moments where I was like, oh my gosh, I could hardly watch this. You know, do you think they would ever push that boundary?
See, I don't think they would. I mean, maybe get a little close to it, but I think they want to keep it in that somewhat family friendly, maybe push a little violence adult, but I don't think they would go that far like we got with Game of Thrones and some of those other ones.
It makes me think, so remember when they were going to do 1313? The video game,
right?
And it kind of reminds me a little bit of that. From what I remember knowing about what was going to be in that game, it was going to be a bit more adult, and a bit more violent, you know, because it was going to be about the underworld. And we even know, I mean, George Lucas's series was about the underworld, so it kind of makes me wonder if it didn't have more of a, if there wasn't that vein of it being more for adults in the sense like it kind of has a Godfather type feel to it or something like that, you know, where everything's a lot grittier and a lot more down to earth in that sense. Whether or not we'd probably ever get like, you know, Twi'lek lovemaking scenes or something, real Twi'leks of the night, I don't think that's where we're going to go, because I think that you always want to keep Star Wars at least PG-13.
Yeah, because I can't imagine what you're talking about coming out as action figures.
Yeah, that's true.
Talk about the adult market.
Talk about Twi'leks hanging from a peg. I mean, come on. Yeah,
but at the same time, you know, I mean, if you are going to stretch Star Wars and stuff like that, I mean, I don't even know if I can get a Punisher action figure based on the Bernthal series, but you know, and if you're talking about, you know, let's say they take some of the ideas from 1313 and it's like, oh, crap, well, we threw away the game, but let's take some of these thoughts and explore it there. And, you know, you could have like a Hutt overlord who's known for, you know, being a little brutal when he's, you know, taking on somebody or something like that. And it's, I think that they may find themselves in a position where they have to forego, you know, some of the action figure stuff, and I don't know if that damages. I think Star Wars is in a really bizarre place in terms of determining its brand, as it were, because if it follows or tries to ape another model too closely, then it loses some of its identity. But if it consciously, you know, pushes away from that and doesn't pay attention to what works with it, then it loses its relevance. And so I think they're in a really, really weird place of trying to establish that. I mean, personally, I would watch I'd at least give a chance to a Star Wars show that would push a boundary like that.
Well, and I would too. But here's the question. Would you want that, though? Do you want them to push the boundaries? Do you want them to go something a little more adult?
Well, I was thinking, you know, I'm thinking even some of the Clone Wars episodes do that, right? I mean, I'm thinking about, remember when Ahsoka is kidnapped and she's having the fight with the Transdojin there in their lair up in the air, and their whole bunker thing is just lined with, you know, heads hanging on the wall, and the lighting feels like a horror movie, and like the whole scene is violent and brutal, and like I you know, in some ways Star Wars has already been there. Our gosh, the Umbara arc with Krell, you know, that kind of stuff. I mean, we have been in darker places with Star Wars, so I could see doing like a mobster type show or something with this.
I'm not discounting Clone Wars, or I adore that series. I think it's one of the best things I've ever watched on television in my entire life. But at the same time, there is a disconnect with there's an abstraction that happens when there's animation. It's the reason that like the Simpsons could show a bare butt, but a live action TV show before NYPD Blue couldn't, because they could say, oh, it's just a cartoon, don't worry about it. You know, so there, I think there's a little bit of wiggle room that you get. And I do think that people would react differently if you took that, if you just took that Clone Wars arc, recast it with live actors and then put it up there. People would react strongly to it. Like it wouldn't allow them to take that step back to regard it more. I don't know the word I'm looking for clinically. But to answer your question, Bruce, would I want that to happen? I'm not opposed to it, but it's not on my wish list. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that sort of thing. Like I wouldn't advocate for it, but if they gave it to me to try it out, I'd be like, okay, you know, sure, let's give this a shot. So,
well, this is one of the things, John, we had talked before. We had an episode of Aggressive Negotiations about genres we would want to see in Star Wars TV or film. And, you know, just thinking through what we've been seeing with Solo and the trailers there, it looks like a cross between a Western and possibly like an Ocean's, you know, 11 type film. Like you put those two together and they had a baby and this is what we got. And maybe a little bit of Baby Driver, because, you know, he's a driver and a flyer. So I think... you know, what we're seeing is if they pull off Solo like they look like they're going to, the movie nobody thought that they wanted, but it could be everything you never knew you always wanted from Star Wars. I think that's a good position to be in, because then you jump off from there and say, okay, how else can we combine other genres into Star Wars, again, the way the Clone Wars did, and find the Star Wars-ness so that it feels like a Star Wars story, but then it feels like a different thing, you know? So, you know, Solo, it doesn't look like it's going to feel like Rogue One, which doesn't feel like A New Hope, you know, which doesn't feel like, you know, The Force Awakens. Well, never mind. That's a bad analogy, but you know what I'm saying.
I would say, you know, if we're going to make reference to that previous discussion, then I would push really hard. I want something like a James Bond type of Star Wars going on.
Imperial Agent.
An Imperial Agent would be great, but how much would you love somebody, doesn't even have to be a rebel. You want a fertile area for a James Bond style movie? The era between Jedi and Force Awakens. Somebody who has to go out and impersonate and go in and figure out what's going on with the status of the Empire and where they are and what they're trying to do. And you could tie it all in an event. Like if you wanted to have this big arc, eventually this person winds up being the one who figures out about, I don't know, Starkiller Base or something like that. And like, oh, or it was Snoke all along. And that's like, you know, one of the movies that they have or something like that. But I'd love a James Bond Star Wars series. That would be heaven to me.
See, that's the right thinking, in my opinion, because it's like, if you just look at a bunch of old movies and even some current movies, but especially the older genre movies, and you just point to each one and just say, okay, do something like that for Star Wars. I mean, I think that's what we're getting with Solo, Matt, like you were mentioning. that, you know, maybe it feels like a Western or something else. And, you know, why not do a James Bond type Star Wars, even an Indiana Jones type Star Wars, you know, archaeology.
I mean, oh, my gosh. No, the whole thing with
Dr. Aphra.
No, that's right. True. But like, no, Indiana Jones type thing you could have. I mean, gosh. Put that from the perspective of the Imperials or the First Order or whatever that are hunting down the artifacts.
Yes.
From, you know, like have make him an evil Indiana Jones that goes around hunting down the artifacts that Kylo Ren and Snoke want so bad. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, you could do that. Totally. See, and I think, again, this is predicated. We've already seen it before. You know, George did the exact same thing in the Clone Wars where he's like, we're going to do Godzilla and it's going to be cool. You're going to make it work. You know, like we're going to bring Darth Maul back. You know, like he just come up with ideas that kind of grew from his love of things like Godzilla films or, you know, that kind of stuff. And we saw Dave do the same thing in Rebels. Bringing in ideas and feelings from other films and other motifs that had happened before in the past in cinema and bringing them forward. Because in a lot of ways, you know, Star Wars is a lot of kids' first introduction to classic film. They don't know it, though.
Well, along that line, you know, when we were talking about branding earlier, maybe that's how Star Wars establishes its brand. Like Marvel establishes its brand by saying, we're going to define what a comic book movie is, and this is our thing, and this is what we do. And then, you know, once they've established, they do the TV series a certain way and everything like that. Maybe that is the character of Star Wars because, you know, the original is, you know, it's a postmodern regurgitation of everything Lucas watched. You know, growing up, which happened to be what everybody watched along with him. And you know, to your point, Matt, yeah, it winds up a doorway for everybody else. So maybe that is the character of Star Wars. That's the brand that it is. Like you said, Bruce, point to things and say, make a Star Wars version of that. I think that would be really cool to go through. You know, it would make me at least intrigued, even if the main hook of the film in the trailer wasn't enough to get me intrigued. If I could point at it and say, oh, I know what they're doing with that one. That's interesting. And, you know, let's see how that turns out. It would at least keep me hooked that way. Because now I'm thinking in terms of something like I'm really hungry for something like what Michael Mann did with Heat, which heavily influenced what Nolan did with The Dark Knight. But something like that, like a big epic movie where you have two clearly defined characters leading two teams and it just, you don't have a need for them to be constantly in motion, but then the tension just builds and builds and builds until you have that big thing and then there's a full denouement. If anybody hasn't seen Heat, it's one of my favorite films of all time, so go out and catch it. I'd love to see something like that with Star Wars.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what Ron Howard, who's director of Solo, said in a recent interview with the Star Wars Story, was that whole idea of that's the brand, I think, of Star Wars is just, you know, it's fun. It's borrowing from other movies. It's that genre and taking certain classic things, but putting it in this universe and kind of shaping it in that.
Yeah. You know, do you think that that is what led to the trouble for Miller and Lord? Like, did they basically come in and say, we're going to make our movie, and that's why it didn't resonate when they looked at it, and they were like, this doesn't fit,
you know? Does like, feel more like the Lego movie as opposed to a Star Wars movie or something? But it felt too modern, maybe.
But doesn't that box in, you know, future creatives who might want to follow that impulse? Like, you know, basically, was that moment their declaration of figuring out what it is that they wanted? Like, they saw what they didn't want, and they were like, wait a minute, now we know for sure what we do want.
Well, like, isn't that what we've heard with Rogue One, too? That it started to feel too much like a war movie and less like a Star Wars movie? And they had to do some reshoots. I mean, those are certain things I've heard.
I will have an undying, and I'm sure unsatisfied, desire for a long time, possibly the rest of my life, if I don't let go of it, to see what that original cut of Rogue One was like. I would really love seeing that work print. That would be pretty awesome. I just want to see what it was,
right,
to judge for myself what didn't work, and did, you know, and do I agree? Like I would love that. But I mean, I love to see alternate versions of films, like when they did the Donner cut of Superman 2.
Yeah.
That was fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Did I think it was better? Honestly, yeah, I thought it was a little bit better than what we got in the final product with Superman 2.
Yeah, I think so too.
But even if I didn't feel that way, it was a fascinating exercise to say, "Oh, wow, mm-hmm. this is what he wanted to do." You know?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that's something that it's been so interesting, because we're seeing that all over the place, you know, in film in general, this struggle between what the studio wants and what the filmmaker wants to do. And it's yeah. Disney and Marvel have had those issues, you know, because they've had filmmakers leave because their vision wasn't going to be supported by the studio. It happened at Warner Brothers, too, obviously, with Justice League. So, I mean, it's been something where we're seeing the return of the studios being the head dogs and not the directors anymore, unless your name is Chris Nolan, and then you can do whatever you want. But there are very yeah. few people like that. Well, and I guess, honestly, I think from what I've heard, Spielberg is pretty much like that, too. If he wants to do something, somebody will write him a check, you know. But again, there are very few filmmakers that are like that. And that's one of the interesting things to me, is as we move forward in this, that's the one thing that George Lucas wanted to get away from.
Yeah.
And so the fact that it's become the very thing that he fought against, which was to allow the filmmaker the freedom to do whatever it is they wanted to do, regardless of what anybody thought about it, to basically let their art flag fly. You know, it's interesting to me to see that. And I do think that one of the things that we saw with the Lord Miller business was that they are slowly starting to figure out in this, you know, Star Wars by committee, what it is that they think Star Wars is in this time period. And they realized it wasn't that. It was going to be something that was what Ron Howard's giving us. And you know.
Well, I think that one of the things when they had the Star Wars show and Ron Howard said, you know, Lucas was there on the first day, you know, to be supportive of me. I loved that. I loved seeing all of that interaction, because the history they have together. But I also, not just because of the history they have together, but it pretty much cemented in my mind that Lucas had something to do with Ron Howard getting the job when that needed to happen. I would not be surprised if they hit a point and they reached and they were like, well, who are we going to bring in? You know, and they reached out to Lucas and they were like, this is the position we're in. And because Ron Howard, you know, open secret, was Lucas was honestly considering him to direct episode one before he decided to take up on his own. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lucas was like, hey, here's your chance. You know, didn't work out before, but here's your chance to step in and get this done. I think the toughest thing to, you know, to speak to your point about Star Wars by committee, Matt, the toughest transition is, you know, I obviously still got giddy when I was like, oh, there's like the Lucas blessing showing up at the beginning. And regardless of where, why, or when it happens, that's the thing that has to be let go of by everybody. You know, that's just something that's going to stop, whether it's a bolt of lightning or just time catching up with everybody. And I think that is the thing. That's why I think it's so important for them to really clearly define themselves and possess it in such a way that I think it just makes it easier for people to sort of let go of that idea yeah. of, you know, well, would Lucas approve? Well, let's make that completely a thought that doesn't even occur to anybody.
Yeah, that's what worries me, because I hear so much about, you know, well, what would George Lucas done? I mean, that's not what George would have done. And it's like, what point do you just say, okay, this isn't George Lucas's universe anymore. I mean, he created it.
I don't know what you're talking about. I got my WWLD bracelet right here, so.
But it's like, you know, I would love for them to follow the Lucas blueprint that he lays everything out and they just have to work within all the things that he's put on paper. You know, it's like, here's the Bible of Star Wars, but I don't think that really exists, at least not to a big extent. And, you know, you got to let these people kind of stretch and move on because, you know, you've got a universe that you're going to create over and over again with different creators in it. And to say, well, the Force doesn't work that way, or no, that's not what George would have done. I mean, at some point, I think you really got to just say it's not George anymore.
You know, it's really interesting, you know, because we keep coming back to that sort of point, and you saying that just springs into my mind, you know, oh, this laid out Bible of everything. George R.R. Martin did that for these Game of Thrones creators. He hasn't even finished the next book or what. I haven't read the series, so I don't know. All the books are like 4 billion pages each, and I'm kind of like, eh.
Right.
You know, only so much time in a day.
And the audiobooks are like 60 hours long. Or something like that.
I'm sorry, man. It's not a judgment. I don't have the time. But like, he at the very least said, you know, like he sat down with them and he said, I might die before these books get done. So do what you will. But these are sort of like the rough strokes of like what I had in mind. Now, obviously, Star Wars is going to keep expanding and go beyond that. But I think it would be cool if there were sort of like at least guideposts, not to limit anybody.
Right.
But just as inspiration points, like, I, you know, like any story conference, somebody comes in and they might have an idea and then it gets thrown out by the end. But before it gets thrown out, everybody has this great conversation and, you know, it was the inspiration point for them. You know, I think that would be interesting.
You know, though, I think that in the same token, and this is something that I really appreciate over on Collider, Kristen Harloff has been talking about this a lot. And I completely 100% agree with him that he thinks it should be Dave Filoni. Dave Filoni should be the one who's in head of creative because Dave Filoni understands how to do all of these things and do exactly what we're talking about and still make it feel Star Wars, but be able to stretch and to move and to mold and all that kind of stuff because... You know, I do think, look, obviously, you know, we're not in the Lucas era anymore. That's done. That's over. It's, you know, there's before Lucas and after Lucas, you know, and we're after Lucas. And so, but when you have a creator like that, where all of this flowed from one person, there is a very specific sense of how that's done and how things are done and why they're done. And so having somebody who understands that because they learned from them for years upon years and allowing them to disseminate then that to others and create those disciples and to help shepherd this series for however long it's going to go. And obviously Disney wants this to go as long as possible because it keeps raking in the Benjamins. So, you know, when you're making that amount of credits, you don't want it to dry up. And I think the best way to not have that happen is to have people go to a Star Wars movie and give them something new, but also have them come away with that feeling of this still feels like Star Wars. And the best way to do that is to have those people who understand what it means to be Star Wars, what it is that something is Star Wars. I think a Dave is really the best kind of way to go, honestly.
But I think I love Dave Filoni as a creator. You know that full well. I'm fully on board with the idea of if you're going to have somebody that's, you know, sort of driving the story conferences, it should be him. I do agree with that sentiment. But by the same, you know, flip side of the same coin, I think it's also getting back to the idea of being in that period where they have, if they successfully clearly define that brand, if they successfully pull it off in the next, you know, by the time that episode 9 comes out, they firmly establish their footing, then they remove the need for, you know, a head. They create, I mean, I guess that's maybe what you're saying, Matt, that like, you know, they start that way and then it sort of spreads through the ranks, sort of thing.
Yeah, you.
So I guess we're both saying it in sort of a in sort of a different way. Where I think it would make sense.
How do you cultivate a culture of Star Wars at Lucasfilm and Disney that so that you can do that? And absolutely. We're trying to. I mean, we're kind of coming at it from different angles, different perspectives, points of view. But really, we're landing in the same place, and I think that is a key because again. I do think that when you kind of look at the history now, so far everybody loved The Force Awakens. A lot of people really liked Rogue One. And whether or not you loved it or not, I don't think anybody came out of that and being like, that did not feel like Star Wars.
I actually do know somebody who hates it.
Okay. Well, there you go. See,
well, there's just one person.
Yeah,
that's purely anecdotal.
Yeah,
I am willing to take bids on giving out his address so that people can egg his house.
Oh, okay.
So. Okay.
Good. I might want to take you up on that. We'll
put that in the show notes.
But you know, I do think the only film that's had major controversy in that sense of is it Star Wars, is it not, you know, all that stuff, is The Last Jedi, and so. It is a really important question for them to answer. And I think that if we get a solo film here that people kind of like all just fall in love with, I think we're going to kind of have our answer to the question of if they've maybe figured some things out.
So you're saying this is like the A/B test to get back to actually a conversation I had over on Filibuster with Sean and Tristan about the A/B test of Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk when Marvel was first establishing its movie franchise, and people really responded positively to Iron Man and people responded less positively. I like the Incredible Hulk. Let me qualify it by saying that.
Oh, me too.
But fewer people were in love with the Incredible Hulk than were with Iron Man. And they were released in very short order with each other. And Marvel looked at it and said, that's the template we go with. So this might be a similar, I think you're right, Matt. This could be a similar situation where they could be paying close attention and say, oh, okay, well, now we know our direction. And the thing is, if we get, you know, the results back or, you know, Solo winds up being a flop or something like that, we'll know the answer either way by the end of May. Yep. So
Solo's going to be the answer.
Well, I was even seeing on Twitter today that apparently so far it's tracking to be ahead of Rogue One, with an opening. So, which is, you know, great for Disney and Star Wars to have that happen.
And that's so surprising, too, because I know so many people, including ourselves, that I'm not that excited about a Han Solo movie. Is that really something we want? And the closer and closer we get to it, the more excited we're becoming of this.
It's the trailers that, because I'm right there. When this was first announced, I was like, I don't want this. But it's the trailers that have won me over.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, you know, that could just be marketing because, you know, trailers come out all the time and you're like, that movie's going to rock. And then you go see the movie and you're like, that movie was meh. So it could have us fooled. But, you know, the fact that the marketing has done it, I really think that's what it is, because we were at Infinity War, totally packed house. There wasn't an empty seat. The Solo trailer came on, and people were like, yeah! It's the first time I've heard that in a theater, but people were pumped for Solo coming out, so.
Well, I think there's also undoubtedly a little bit of, muscle memory. Like, it's a Star Wars movie. You know, I can be a grump about it all that I want to, but when we're like a couple of weeks away, they're like, by the way, it's coming out in a couple of weeks. I'm going like, oh, fine, I'll go see it. Fine, you know? Fine, I'll get MoviePass so I can see it five times in opening weekend. Fine!
I'm going to be really curious what you guys think of Solo. So, we're just a couple of weeks away, and I'm really anxious to hear what everybody thinks of Solo, and I'm really hoping it's positive, so... I thank you guys for joining us here on the Star Wars Report. So, John, where can people find you online if they want to follow you?
Oh, gosh. I would love to engage anyone in a discussion. My handle is Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. And you can find me co-hosting actually over on the Nerd Party, I'm co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler. I co-host Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. And getting back to the Nerd Party, I co-host a little show called Aggressive Negotiations with Matt.
Yeah, that guy that is sitting next to your brain, because he's the other half.
Yes. Yes, the better half, the nicer half.
So where can we find that other half online, Matt?
You can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02, and of course in Instagram under the same name. I'm also over on the Nerd Party with a different show that's not Aggressive Negotiations, but check out Aggressive Negotiations. It's great. It's called Owlpost. I'm doing it with Drea Kaufman, and we're going through each and every chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, so that is a blast. And then I'm over on the Track FM network, and I'm doing a show there called The Orb with my good friend Chris Jones, talking all about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do the 602 Club, which both of you guys frequent quite frequently, where we talk about all the fandoms we love, but we got a lot of Star Wars talk over there too, so check that out. I think everybody's going to love that. And then if you've got room for one more, check out Cinema Stories that I do with my friend Courtney, where we talk about films through the lens of faith.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us, and hope to have you back sometime.
Yeah, love to be back.
This is Catherine Tabor, and I play Padme Amidala, and you're listening to the Star Wars Report.
Man, I love those guys. They're awesome.
I know. That's why I wanted to have them on. Actually, one of the first times I ever was on a podcast about Star Wars was on the 602 Club that Matt Rushing hosts, and it was with John Mills. So they're like the guys that I do started doing Star Wars podcasting with, and now they spun that off from 602 Club and are doing Aggressive Negotiations, but without me.
Oh. It's still a party.
No, it's still a party. So no, anyway, yeah, they're great. I love them. They're the best. So I wanted to have them on, and Aggressive Negotiations is really a good show. But we have something to talk about, because Nerdist interviewed Jon Favreau. You know who Jon Favreau is, right?
Yeah, the director of Iron Man.
The director of Iron Man.
Wasn't he also the MMA fighter in Friends?
He was Monica's boyfriend.
Yeah. Oh, man, we're going way.
I always think about that when I see him. I don't know why. I just think about that.
Play Happy also? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Well, he was at the red carpet for Solo, and Nerdist interviewed him. And he said something very interesting, Mark. He said about his new Star Wars TV series, because we did get notification a couple months ago that he was working on a new live-action TV series for the new Disney app that's coming out next year in 2019. I don't know. I don't think we yet know when the Star Wars series will premiere on the app, but they're definitely in at least pre-production or planning stages of development for this new series. What did he tell us? What did he tell us, Mark?
Well, according to the tweet we're looking at here, he confirms that his live-action Star Wars series takes place 7 years after the Battle of Endor. That is Episode 6. It's going to be between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens, although if we're going to say between, it's really closer to the one than the other. But they're going to be using cutting-edge tech a la The Jungle Book. So that's going to be interesting.
So that means there's going to be
live action
lions and tigers and bears.
Well, think about the type of technology there with The Jungle Book. You had the live actor who basically that was a one man show. You know, you think about The Jungle Book, you have the kid playing Mogwai, and he was basically in a blue screen room all by himself. Every other character in that is all CG.
So this is going to be like the prequels
and CG. And you think about it, Jon Favreau is on the cutting edge of technology. So this could be very cool in the aspect of the blend of what we're getting. And to a sense, this is almost like the best aspect of the prequels, because that's what Lucas really did well back then, was the mixing of the CGI with the live action stuff. So that's kind of cool.
I think one thing this definitely then tells us is this is not a series that is using those scripts, those 50 scripts that Lucas was planning a TV series, the Underworld, Underground, whatever. What was it called? Underworld, right?
Underworld or 1313.
Yeah, they were 1313.
Kind of the same ballpark of the genre of where they were going. They were going gangster. And we still don't really know the plot. I mean, I've heard people saying they think this is going to be with Luke and Kylo's fall. And as much as I think that would be cool, I don't think that's going to be the case at all. I think you're going to see something more like Rebels, where the core group of characters are Rey. You know, they're not attached to anybody. They're just people caught in the midst of this war. And we're going to see a certain point of view of the galaxy from their perspective. Whether there's any force sensitivity or not, you know, or smugglers or gangsters or just, you know, like the family from the Ewok movie, that they're just a family, you know, I'm a simple farmer trying to make my way in the galaxy. Like, you know, it could be something as simple as that.
Yeah, because he did say it was going to be like a group of all new characters, which makes me wonder, you know, why 7 years after the Battle of Endor? And
status quo.
Well, I'm just wondering, first of all, I'm glad it's in that time period because I want to start filling in the gaps between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. But this is my wish list. I'm not saying I want this, but I'm hoping that they do a series where it's maybe in that unknown region and it's what the Empire is trying to form themselves back into doing and figure out who they are and how they fit in the galaxy or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I kind of hope. That's my new hope.
Well, let me see. I'm trying to get to a timeline here. Because, see, I don't think... Where is Aftermath? Aftermath? I think Aftermath is set much
farther.
It's
like 2 years. Wasn't it 2 years after the... No, wait. Yeah. Because the Battle of Jakku. No, wait.
Now I got to know. Because that is critical. Knowing when Aftermath is gives you that Empire state of mind, because after Aftermath, the Empire
that's what the show's gonna be called, after aftermath,
the After Hours Aftermath. Let's see if we can find a timeline placement for that here. We know that in Aftermath, the Empire basically decimates themselves and what's left becomes the First Order. They leave the galaxy and are eventually found by Snoke and come back as the First Order we know from the films.
Yes.
But we don't know much about what happened once they left the galaxy before they come back.
That's what I want
to
hear.
So if it takes place after Aftermath, then we know that the Empire is done and we're in more of a pseudo First Order stage. Right. But if Aftermath hasn't happened, then we're still in that kind of like the Second Imperium was in the legend story, where there are all these factions fighting for power still.
Right.
So, yeah, we definitely got to find that location. I want to find that really cool. Here we go. Maybe these books probably won't have it.
This would be after Aftermath. If it's 7 years after.
I'm going to grab the Aftermath book.
Right. Oh, there he goes. There he goes. Because Leia, I think, was even pregnant with Ben in Aftermath, the Aftermath books.
That was much easier than trying to look it up online. All right, so of course, this is the new Del Rey, so there's no dates here, so gotta love that. It does have it butting up against Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
I'm gonna have to go online, mother of all.
I'm telling you, it's after Aftermath. That's the name of the series, too, after Aftermath.
Well, I mean, basically, you think about this, right? The blurb for Aftermath. Aftermath is a canon novel by Chuck Wendig and published by Del Rey. It's set between Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, and Episode 7, The Force Awakens. I mean, check. Yeah, you got that checkbox. That's why, for me, these timelines are critical. Because that is a big gap. And this book, Aftermath, has a significant change for what's going on with the Empire. I mean, to me, like...
Yeah, but the Battle of Jakku, they've defined as being about, what, 2 years after the Battle of Endor. And the Battle of Jakku is in the Aftermath books. The last one, for sure. Yeah.
There you go. That's why am I even going for the book? I just need to go for that. Yeah, the Battle of Jakku.
Right.
Does everybody want to go back to Jakku?
Bless you. Not mine. Oh, wait, that's Achu. Anyway.
Old Republic. Falling Old Republic. Wow, that's... Man, is this even right? Okay. But Riley was always quick with this. You know, I don't know how he did it.
I don't know.
And almost there.
I don't even think Riley watched Star Wars. Did he see it?
Imperial era, pre-galactic civil war. Gallius Rax. We were getting close. Death Star, moving on Genosis.
All I'm going to say right now is this is the end of the show, and we're going to go out with Mark trying to find his answer.
This is major.
Hey, everybody can follow me on Twitter at Admiral_Rex. And of course, you can find Star Wars Report on Twitter at Star Wars Report. And you can find us on Facebook. And you can find Mark on Twitter at IllogicalRogue2. Mm-hmm. And he's still looking as we start to close out the show.
Battle of Jakku.
What did you find?
4 years after the Battle of Yavin. Okay, there we go. All right.
Jakku's out 4 years after Yavin? The Battle?
Yeah. Five after the Battle of Yavin.
Five. Okay, so there'd be a year after the Battle of Endor.
Yep. So the Empire is gone.
Yes, the Empire's gone, but it's brewing something else out there, out in the unknown regions.
So this could give, if they gave us an Imperial point of view right now, this is the most critical window we could get for the people that want to know anything about Snoke coming in and seizing control from Sloane. If they give us that point of view, God, how awesome would it be if Sloane's one of the characters?
That would be awesome.
I mean, dude, that right there, like, I want that story. I almost am like, forget Luke. Like, give me Sloane. Because if we're not going to get anything about Snoke, this is the opportunity for the people that want that kind of closure. Because, I mean, Snoke came out of nowhere, was a big power player, wrestled the control of everything. Like, that's a big story. Oh, man. Favreau playing that? Okay. I got my answer. I'm happy. Woo!
He's done. And many Bothans died to bring us Mark's freak out moment.
I'm after this aftermath. Over the aftermath.
Alright, up the corner.